been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the Hashtag MoleEdge podcast. I am joined again by our co-host Becky Lohman. Welcome back to the podcast from last week. I'm the one that's
parachuting. Welcome back to you just roll in hot whenever you feel like it.
I'm the one showing up, yeah, kind of out of the blue here. But we are in the state capitol in Senator Dave Schatz's office. Before we get into the podcast, I think we have to congratulate Team Fun on his fantasy football victory over you this week. I don't think you saw, our head of football operations is actually the executive producer of the show, Ben Peters. You didn't expect us to go for a low-scoring ground game, grinded-out victory, did you?
No, I didn't expect that at all. Yeah. And I feel a little unfair because my football consultant, Alex Eaton, is at home working. So, I mean, ganged up on right now.
Is he walking off the loss still? Is that why he's home?
No, he recovers pretty well. I mean,
Have
you ever seen Alex Eaton in a bad mood, anything other than just totally chipper and optimistic?
That's actually
He's recovered.
Point.
He's always looking forward, right? That rolls off his back. He's ready for the next game.
That's a fair point. But we are here in the office of Senator Schatz. Senator Schatz, thank you for making time today.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So you're all in the Capitol today for the Transportation Committee hearing.
Yes.
It's an interim committee. Yourself, Representative Corlew, are putting together some plans, gathering information. And I wasn't going to ask you this on the air, but your answer was so good. What do you expect to get from an interim committee?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's a foregone conclusion. I think that we've all come to the realization that there is a shortfall. And maintaining and taking care of probably one of the greatest assets we have here in the state is the infrastructure road system that we have. And I think that most people would agree that we're lacking funding. And people would really like to invest into our roads and bridges and transportation funding. And it's one of the most basic fundamental things that government does is to provide that resource. And what we've found, I mean, I don't think there's any new magic bullets out there. We've not seen any new great ideas. There's some things that have been floated about. I think a lot of the things that we've looked at really revolve around an increase in the funding mechanism, whether it be the transportation tax or some form of general revenue, a shift of general revenue to transportation funding. And it's trying to figure out where and or what are people going to support. And ultimately, I believe it's an issue that we need to go to the voters, present them. I believe they will accept the fact there is a problem, but presenting them with the things that we've found and asking them to make that investment into transportation is ultimately, I think, what we're going to come up with. And I think it's, what is that amount? How much is it? Let's do a significant amount. Let's not have to go back to the voters on an ongoing basis, but let's do something that gets us out maybe 10, 15 years from now.
I find it interesting that the senators, by and large, that see the problem with transportation and are willing to do something about it are people that understand businesses. Senator Eichel, Senator Lively, yourself, you're the people that have actually employed people. You understand having an asset. Do you see a correlation between people that will actually do their adult responsible work on transportation and people that have owned businesses?
Well, I do. I think that because obviously I understand when I think it from a business perspective, I look at an asset and I'll take it. I deal in utility world and I have tractors and machines and machinery. If I'm not continually reinvesting in the equipment I have, at some point in time when that wears out, if I'm not ready to make that reinvestment, I'm going to be out of business. And that's the same way we hear in this state. If we aren't willing to make sure that we're putting enough money back into our roads and bridge systems and acquiring new equipment and or providing new roads, then at some point in time, we're going to find ourselves in a position where we can't even be competitive to try to attract new industry to this state. And so from a business perspective, I understand what depreciation is. Depreciation is real. Those roads and bridges are declining and deteriorating. At some point in time, you've got to be able to put money back into them. But the reality is what we've seen with inflation. The last time we had a tax increase was 1996. Inflation has eroded that buying power from 17 cents. It's about 7 or 8 cents right now is all that we can afford to replace. But the cost of asphalt, concrete, labor, all those things have escalated. And literally, so trying to put a foot of concrete or a foot of asphalt, what we were doing in 1996, we can't buy that same foot. You know, we may only be able to buy 4 inches of asphalt pavement really in reality. And so we have to be able to come up and elevate the funding to match the 21st century needs.
Well, let me just ask you a real basic, simple hillbilly question. Did they set it up poorly when they said it's so much cents a gallon? Should it have been like other sales taxes, a percentage of the purchase of gas?
Well, I think that because that fluctuates so much, we've seen the price of gas, I mean, randomly from place to place, we see that. So I don't necessarily know that the way that we've done it, but maybe there should have been a CPI adjustment done on the per gallon at some point in time. That would have made more sense. That way you wouldn't be going back having to readdress that issue. I know that folks have rejected the notion of not having it eventually go back and go through the legislative process, but we've seen how difficult that is. Again, the last time it was adjusted was 1996. But I do think where states have went in there and they put a CPI adjustment on the amount of gallons that, you know, on that particular element of it, because we see wide swings on a day-to-day basis that it may run 50 to 67 cents, 70 cents on a daily basis. And so people probably would be frustrated if it was a percentage, you know, if it was based upon that element, and we wouldn't really be able to predict the revenue stream. But we know from history, we know the amount of gallons of diesel and gas that are being purchased on an annual basis. We've seen that kind of plateau and maybe taper off a little bit. Obviously, we have electric cars, we have other things, hybrids and things that are depressing some of that fuel mileage. And fuel mileage increases. You know, the CAFE standards we've seen that decline there because cars are getting more fuel efficient. So, but we do know we have a pretty stable revenue source right there. So just maybe an inflation mechanism on per gallon would make sense too.
Let's do a prediction around the room. Becky, does the legislature have the grit to actually put more money in transportation next year?
I think there are members of the legislature that have the grit.
Can they get it done? Can this governor sign one? I mean, this is adult legislating.
I think it would be really tough. I think that it's certainly possible, but they have a long road, and there's a lot of people that I think would throw themselves in front of that train, so to speak, to ensure that doesn't happen.
I predict no.
Yeah.
Senator, what do you think?
No, here's the thing. I think the prediction should be, I think, what do we put? I think if it's something, a referendum that goes to the voters, I think that stands a chance of making it through the process. The governor signed it. I think a lot of people are unwilling to be called a tax increaser. Even some people are so far as to think even if they allow a referendum forward, that makes them a tax increaser. I don't buy into that. I think allowing the voters to make the choice to whether they make that investment, I think it's inherent upon us to put something before them that allows them to make that choice. And so I think that occurs, and I think what the recommendation that may come from this committee will be something of that form, of putting a referendum, putting an issue out there that allow the voters, because we literally can't do enough significantly through the legislative process because of the Hancock restraints that we really can't address the issue going forward unless we would do something on a much larger basis through a referendum.
So do you think the voters, by and large, understand where we're at with our roads and bridges and our infrastructure? Because I was having this debate the other day with somebody, and they're, you know, driving down 70 and it looks good. 70 looks fine to them. So do you think that the voters, if put in front of them, would support it? You think they see the urgency that we all understand in the building to be true?
I think it's different for different people, because obviously some people that are traveling on roads and bridges that they're not very happy with probably see that necessary, but then we start squabbling over whether money's being spent, whether it's being spent enough, if it's being spent in St. Louis and my community and then going here, again going there. And I don't want to get into that part of the sharing of where the revenue goes, but I think by and large, whenever people are affected, when their lives are affected on a day-to-day basis, a bridge goes out in your community and your bus can no longer travel and take your kids to school over that particular bridge, those people get it. They understand that. When we have shutdown, bridges get shut down in certain areas and places. It happened in Kansas City. Those people get that we don't have enough funding to do that. But as long as the sky is blue and I'm driving down my road and my subdivision is all good and my way to work, they don't get it. But you have a major artery shutdown. I think when we look back at what happened in the flooding back here in the spring, and we've seen the interstate shut down, people don't realize how vitally important our infrastructure is until they can no longer access it and use it. And so I have a business that's located right on I-44 that when that road was shut down, that's our stream of commerce to get our people to work. And when that's no longer there, then people get it. It's like, wow, that is very important to have that and make sure that we can continue. So it just depends on where those individuals are, but I think we can make the case. And I think it's inherent upon us to go to our districts, educate our constituents on the needs, And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think the legislature will have to do that in order to get this passed.
Speaking of commerce, I want to thank our friends at the San Luis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Many of them live in your district, right?
Sure.
So you have Franklin County. How many people do you have in St. Louis County?
I have about 75,000. I have the Chesterfield Valley area, Eureka, and Wildwood is the western part of St. Louis County is what I serve. About 75,000 constituents there.
Looking ahead to next session, what do you see as the issue that you go into session thinking about, knowing what's going to be, what's going to be the thing everybody's buzzing about in January?
I think transportation. I think we just came out of our caucus meetings last week. Transportation is at the forefront. We had Patrick McKenna was there, and he made a presentation to our caucus. And I think transportation funding is going to be right up there. I think labor reform is going to be something that's going to be a topic of conversation. Prevailing wage is going to be an issue. Some issues as far as that and tort reform. We're going to continue to work on some of the tort reforms. There's a few things that didn't get done last year, so I think that's something that will be out there in the front. I'm going to continue to work on some workers' compensation issues and continue some of the work that I did last year and making some improvements, I believe, to make business a better place for people here in Missouri. So I'll continue to work on stuff like that.
On prevailing wage, we asked Senator Wasson this almost a year ago. Is there a compromise out there on prevailing wage?
I don't know. From our perspective, I think there is a compromise. I don't know that's a sacred cow that I'm not sure some of the labor folks are willing to give up any ground on that. If there's anything that's going to be significantly changed in that, I think that's something that they probably don't want to live with. So I think that we could probably come, there are some issues and some thresholds that we might look at changing, but I'm not sure that they're willing to go there. I mean, what they proposed, and they've given us several proposals to look at, but they really don't want to modify the current system that allows for the occupational titles, we have 28 occupational titles that have all these different requirements in each title. I want a simple system that doesn't create a barrier for entry of people into the marketplace. What we find in smaller communities and counties across the state is they cannot get local contractors to compete for this work because it's cumbersome and burdensome, and they don't want to find themselves in a gotcha moment whenever they don't fulfill the requirements of a prevailing wage order.
Do you do prevailing wage jobs?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Yep. This is just something that I've noticed, being from the Boot Hill, now living about probably 10 blocks from your district. It's an interesting thing. In St. Louis, it doesn't appear that the St. Louis contractors are complaining about prevailing wage. It appears that outstate. Is there a third-class county solution where you let third-class counties very much simplify or eliminate the prevailing wage stuff and leave the cities alone? Because they're different. The city is different from...
Sure, it is.
Is that a compromise that's
doable? I mean, and there's something we've talked about that. I mean, there's been some proposals put out there to look at maybe counties being able to opt in or opt out, so that's an idea that's out there that's circulated. We've done quite a bit of study on this particular issue, and so we have a lot of information on actually the number of projects that are being done. The reality is about 86% of the projects that are being done out there are less than $500,000 or less.
Yeah.
So if we put a threshold in there and said, okay, we're going to exempt, projects of $500,000 and under, that would be something that would virtually take away 86% of the projects that are being done. Now, in that other percentage, though, that 16% is 91% of the dollar that's associated with prevailing. It's nearly $2 billion of projects that are being done across the state on those types of projects.
Is Franklin County rural Missouri, or has it become a metro suburban county?
Well, I guarantee you, it just depends where I'm from. Yeah. I'm from rural Missouri, Sullivan, Missouri. I'm on the southwest corner of Franklin County. When we get into Washington, Missouri, I mean, we're pretty close to that St. Louis County area there, but it's growing, obviously,
If you live in Gray's Summit, do you live in Missouri or Missouri?
Well, I
think you may have grown up in Missouri, but now you're Missouri.
So, but we have that's kind of the fine line that I have to, and I think a pretty good fit for that district is because, we're close enough to the city suburban areas but we still have enough of the, out there in the country folks out there that I connect with very well as also.
Gary Romine has this huge district, but the folks in Southern Jeffco are a whole lot like the folks in Southern St. Francis County or even Iron County. The folks in, your constituent, Tony Messenger in Wildwood, is probably quite different from someone in Sullivan.
Sure.
You're spanning a very different part of Missouri all in one Senate district.
Yeah, that is correct. Wildwood is kind of a unique place in itself. When I look at, you know, the makeup of the district and the type of constituents that we represent. But again, you know, predominantly the work that I have done in the utility contracting world, we work in the city, you know, on an ongoing basis. That's where we do the majority of our work is in there. So I'm in that area. I get familiar with those people. But I also, like I said, I connect with the farmers and the people that I live out. What I would get there on my family farm where I grew up. I still live on the family farm. So, but I also know what it's like to be able to go into Wildwood and understand the needs that those people are wanting to address as well. So
let's talk politics.
Sure.
Mike Searpoy going to be a senator?
I think he is. I think that we're going to do whatever it takes and make sure that that occurs. I think a lot of people are committed to making sure. Obviously, there's some distractions out there right now with the third candidate in the race. Makes it a little interesting. But I think at the end of the day, we're going to see Mike Searpoy as the next senator from the 8th District.
I'm a little bit impressed, mostly because, you know, you saw the Democrats be so... I mean, you guys have beat them at everything you can beat them at. However... I don't know if it's a reaction to Trump or what it is. In the 50th, they ran a very competent race. The Republicans won, but I would say that effort surprised people. Now in the 8th, going and having the candidate's husband go, the Democrat candidate's husband go sign a petition to get Turk on the ballot, having a Democratic lawyer, that was, just speaking politically, that was a very smart, gutsy move that you would not have seen the Democrats making
right
2 years ago. I mean, there seems to be a heartbeat there where there wasn't one.
Sure. No, I think there's whether it's a renewed resurgence and starting to see some things, some of the effects of maybe some of the change in leadership there, maybe making some decisions a little differently. I'm not sure what all is generating that, but obviously it's...
Something's different, though.
It's a little something. Yeah, it's a little different, and I think that they've had to do some things differently because they've seen some significant deterioration and losses of their numbers, and so... it's going to be a challenge. I don't think it, by any stretch of the imagination, it's going to be a difficult challenge, but I think that we're going to rise to that challenge. We want to retain that seat. It's very important to us, and so we were on a call this morning to have some conversations on that, and we're committed to making sure that we provide the resources and the help necessary to get that
What's
taken
it
going
to cost to win that seat now with another Republican on the ballot?
I'm probably not the best guy to answer that particular
question.
You
ran the best Senate primary in the history of Senate primaries. It was the most amazing thing. The Speaker of the House was going to run, and it was the greatest primary because you never had to spend a dime or there was no race. But Senator Schatz became Senator Schatz. I don't know what you in Butler County, we'd call it just elbowing out. We'd call it, if you were playing basketball,
boxing out a little bit.
Box out.
Run some big elbows.
It was an interesting primary, but it looks to me like that seat. You're going to have to work a lot harder now with Turk on the ballot.
Sure. No, I think that, like I said, that changes the dynamic a little bit, and obviously...
Sure, we should have learned from you and boxed Turk out.
Well, I think that possibly, you know, that may have been something that tried to occur there, but I just think that, and again, I do not know Mr. Turk at all. I've never met him at this point in time. But again, you know, choosing to run as a third party candidate, really at the end of the day, does he advance the conservative ideas that he would like to that he espouses? I'm not sure that's the best. There's an opportunity for him to run in a primary in the next cycle.
Well, he's just selfish, right? Yeah. I mean, that's all you can say. Yeah. He's selfishly putting himself ahead of what
he
says.
Well, but again, I you never wanted to say someone can't deny them the opportunity to do what they feel is right. And
sure.
So, but when I look at that, I literally believe that ultimately it becomes potentially a spoiler in that particular issue because, you know, I'm not sure that there's anyone that could reasonably believe they could win from that position.
The last time the Democrats stole that kind of southeastern Jackson County Lee Summit focus seat, it was a special election where another Republican was in, and the Democrat held it for a year and then lost it the next general election.
Right.
But, so let's talk about the U.S. Senate race. So Josh Hawley announced, and you know, qualified guy, but this Courtland Skies guy, have you seen the videos?
I have not.
It's over the top.
Oh, yeah. That's actually incredible. It's like a 7-minute video, and I watched to the end. That's how compelling it was.
I
almost used the word compelling. I watched to the end because it was that interesting.
I will have to watch now because I'm interested
in
that.
It's pretty good, and it gets better as you go.
He just, I mean, he pours hate on Josh Hawley for 7 and never lets up. It is a, I assume he doesn't have a lot of money to be a real candidate, But my goodness, I mean, I almost felt bad for
Holly. It was a pretty well-produced video. I mean, well, that's the question is, where is this money? I mean, that video wasn't something that I threw together on my computer. I mean, it was pretty well put together, and you just have to, he just has a big question mark in my mind. He's sort of a fascinating character to throw his name out there.
So you going to support Josh Hawley?
At the end of the day, I'll support the Republican candidate on that Republican ballot. Again, I probably, if I could have chose differently, I may have went down a different direction. But I think that when we look at the abilities that Josh Hawley has, and again, I'm hopeful that that's the job that he wants to be in. And so I just am cautiously optimistic there. But if he's the right guy, I think the resources will be made available to him. You know, for that particular race. But if he's the candidate at the end of the day, I'm going to support the Republican candidate.
There's a few folks in the state Senate. When I think of Missouri, I think Munslinger, you, a Jay Wasson. Does it concern you that maybe people in Washington are picking Republican nominees more so than people in Washington, Missouri?
Yes, it does. I mean, I do have a concern about that. At the end of the day, that is concerning for me. I want to make sure, you know, we want to be able to think that we have to be involved in that process, that what our input matters. But again, we also realize that money really dictates a lot of what goes on in politics here. I better turn my phone off. It's ringing there. But at the end of the day, you know, having the resources, we all know what it takes to win campaigns. You've got to get your message out there. You've got to have name ID, name recognition. And sometimes maybe a potential candidate that might be a good fit doesn't have those abilities or can't make that happen. Oh. So
they need to be able to win, right?
I always like talking to people.
You have to be able to win.
Right, have to be able to win.
Yeah, if they get a call during the interview, it's probably from Washington, Missouri, not Washington, D.C.
Actually, that was Senator Rowden calling me right now. I called him earlier on the way up here, and I forgot to turn my phone off. Anyway.
So speaking of, your name's at the top of most people's list of running for leadership. Are you going to seek leadership in the next session?
Absolutely. No, my goal is to run for pro tem. I'm not interested in any other position other than pro tem. So I put my name in there, and so I've been going through the process of making sure people are aware of that and working to develop the relationships necessary to get the support to obtain that position. So,
as of now, do you have an announced opponent? Or?
Well, I think Senator Romine is someone that has thrown his name in there. I'm not sure if anyone else has at this particular point. But obviously, I came out very early on and let people know that was my intentions. Not that it means anything to be the first person out there, but I wanted, you know, I have seen in my time serving in the House that obviously it doesn't hurt to get out there early to make sure that somebody doesn't commit to someone because they didn't realize somebody else might be running. So I wanted to make people sure that they were aware that I was that was my intentions going forward.
So folks listening to this are more, they're some of the more savvy folks that follow politics. In the Senate, sometimes front runners can kind of get caught up on, and people
sure.
And it is clear in the past. Sometimes somebody that promises to vote for somebody in April, when it comes November, doesn't always vote that way. How do you go about running for leadership in the Senate when you have a couple very recent times where folks have flip-flopped at the
moment? Oh, I know. It's a concern.
Does that make you a little nervous about running for leadership in the Senate?
It does. But obviously, though, you know, I want to make sure that I haven't asked people for commitment. That's one thing that I haven't went out and done and said, you know, I'd like you to get on board. Sure, I would take those individuals. But one thing I'll tell you about Senator Schatz is if Senator Schatz tells you he's with you, he'll be with you today, tomorrow, and forever. And again, I think that your word is the most key thing that you have, and it's the most important thing you have in this particular chamber, is if you tell somebody you're with them, then you better be with them, because that's what people are looking for. They want to be able to trust you. They want to be able to know that your word is golden, and that's what I bring to this leadership race is that.
And I think that's to be so respected, because even if you disagree, having someone be honest with you, I think, goes a long way. You see people disagree all the time, but they can leave that situation with respect. As long as you're honest and you stick to your word.
Sure. And I think that's, again, I'm not saying that, you know, that somebody isn't a man of their word. Sure. But, I mean, that's just been one of the things that my dad and my uncle very impressed upon me is that your word is the only thing that you have, and you need to protect it and take care of it. So
I've found professionals can take a no. What they can't take is lying.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, most grown-ups can take a no on stuff.
And if you have to come back to an individual, I mean, but ultimately, if I would tell you, Scott, this is what I'm going to do, and I have guaranteed you that that's where I'm going to stand, the only person that can release me from that obligation is you. Yeah. You could. I would have to ask you to release me from that obligation in order for me to be able to say I could all of a sudden turn my back and do something different. So I also know it's very careful to make sure that what you say, you have to be very careful in what you tell someone. And if I'm not sure about something, I'm going to tell you this. Let me get back to you. That way it gives me time and opportunity before I would do something, because I have before said things that I ultimately had to fulfill that I should have thought through a little longer. And so, but ultimately that's what I'd like to do, is to make sure that if I'm not sure what I need to commit to, I'll get back to you on that, and then I'll be able to think through the process.
From the lobbyist perspective, nothing makes me more nervous than telling you one sentence and you saying, I'm good, right? Because of that, of exactly what you described, right? I mean, I got to make sure everybody has, if you commit too quickly, I'm putting you as an undecided probably, because, you know, you need all the information, and I assume someone else is going to come. That disagrees with me and chat with whoever. So.
And it's a challenge. Like I said, it's a challenge in this building, because the number of things that come flying at us on a day-to-day basis, sometimes we get a lot of stuff. And so I try to be careful to make sure that that I know the issue, particularly that I'm talking about. And if I don't have enough information, I'm going to be careful to commit to whether or not where I'm going to be supportive or not until I get that information and try to move forward with it.
So if you're the pro tem, obviously the first question people want to know is, what about PQs? Are you a fan of them?
Here's what I'm not a fan of. You know, people talk about the traditions of the Senate. I would like to be able to uphold the traditions of the Senate in the same way that, you know, that the PQ was rarely used, so was the filibuster. And I think that, you know, a continual use of a filibuster for the purposes only of delaying time and killing time is one thing. You know, when we're trying to come to a significant compromise and using it for those tools, but simply just as a stall tactic, I think is something that at the end of the day, it's something that's available to us, that whether it be Republicans and or Democrats, if 18 people, because it's in the rules, if 18 people choose to use the previous question as a tool to move the debate, the discussion on, I am a big fan of saying, you know, I think the people in this state want to see us get to a vote on issues at the end of the day. And I think that, you know, elections have consequences. We have majorities. But I also know that we cannot use the majorities just to steamroll our opponents, that we have to include them into the discussion. We need to make sure that they're included. But at the end of the day, I think people, when you look at the frustration they have in Washington, D.C., of getting absolutely nothing done, the gridlock that's there, I don't think people will be very happy here in Missouri if we have constant gridlock. And there's going to be some very tough issues. Do I think that there, you know, but at some point in time, I think that it's necessary to move to the previous question. I would hope that we could go through and the relationships that you would develop. And I think what we've seen over time, because of term limits, we don't have those long-term relationships with people that we would be able to work through issues and ultimately not have to avoid that. But we've seen with this term-limited world that we live in now, it's kind of changed the dynamic, because people are here and then they're gone. And then you're developing a new relationship with somebody coming in. So, again, I'm not...
Do you think the PQ has been used too much in the last 5 years?
I know it's been used quite a bit. Probably more historically when, it hadn't been used a lot. But I don't think the filibuster was used as much as it was, as we've seen in the last 5 years as well.
When you have to PQ something, is that a failure of leadership?
Not necessarily, but if we come to a point where, you know, it's either, if we get to the issue and it's either red or it's black, at some point in time, I mean, at what point do we just say that we can't agree, we can't change it red, we can't change it green, we can't change it to this other color, but it's either red or black. At some point in time, it's either yes or no, and you have to vote. What should we do? When we come to that stalemate, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to utilize and just say, well, we just can't come to any agreement, therefore we do nothing? And that's where I say at some point in time, I think it's appropriate to look at that measure and say, even the other side, should the other side allow a vote to go forward and say, you know what, today's just not my day. And so it can be,
so
it can be put in.
If you're negotiating with Senator Walsh, is it the point where she quits offering compromises? At what point do you say this just isn't going to work?
I think we go to the extent of we just do everything that we can in order to try to work out an agreement. And at some point in time, there's only probably going to be a myriad of issues that we're probably going to ever get to that point. And again, they may be pro-life issues or pro-labor issues are probably the ones that are going to ultimately rise to the level, or maybe a tort reform that may rise to that level. But there's compromises to be had at all. And my goal in the legislation that I've tried to move forward is, you know, I'll take a half a sandwich as no sandwich at all. You know, so I think the compromise can be, again, let's make progress. It may not be perfect what I would like to have, but in a mediation process, neither side gets everything they want. And so I think there's a way that we can move forward that hopefully doesn't lead us down that path, but at some point in time that we are going to come to a stalemate on a particular issue that we're going to have to decide, are we going to just stall out and nothing's going to happen, or do we move forward with the previous question? So again, I'm not telling you that I'm a tremendous fan of it, but I do know it's a tool that's available to us, that at the end of the day, it takes 18 people in order to agree that we would move forward on that issue. So
you're looking at labor, torts, pro-life. Those have, you know, labor and pro-life have been where the peak has been moved recently.
Right.
One on
a
discrimination bill. But and so it's your guess, it's got to be a major piece of legislation. That
sure.
A big priority.
Yeah. Sure. I think it definitely has to rise to that level.
I thought the Senate passed plenty of bills last year. There's been people that complain, Republicans complain that they didn't pass enough bills.
Well, I think we passed a historic low number. I think 53 pieces of legislation.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I think it's a good thing, but yeah, I think they were quality. I think we don't need to look at
quantity.
They were
big bills.
We need to look at the quality of bills that went through. I was very successful in several things that I was fortunate enough to get quite a few things across the finish line. Would like to have got a couple more across the finish line. Everybody liked to get as much done as they could, but at the end of the day, I looked at the quality of what we did, and I was very satisfied. Would I like to have seen a couple more things get done? Absolutely. And again, can we do that in a bipartisan way where we walk out of this building and look at each other and be happy? We're going to fight battles, but at the end of the day, we can sit across the table and have dinner with each other and still remain friends.
Should you be successful in becoming pro tem, you'll be the only member of the metro area in St. Louis that's in leadership. And the only member looks like for a while that's poised to do that. Are you somebody that could sit down and would you be willing to take that on and try to explain to some folks in the city why it's hard to help them from Jeff City and try to help them with some of their dysfunction? Is that
sure,
a role you take?
No, I think absolutely. I think that even because representing the portion of St. Louis County that I do, I think I think that would be inherent upon me to be able to take on that role and be able to do some of those things and try to be able to work with those individuals. I mean, we got some issues in St. Louis County and St. Louis City that need to be resolved, but a lot of them I do believe are decisions that need to be made in St. Louis County and St. Louis City too. But there needs to be some work. They need to engage with the legislature as well to try to come to a resolution on some of those issues.
Would you allow a bill to come to a vote in the Senate that made a statewide vote on a merger? My assumption is your portion is
I would probably say that that's probably not in the best interest of the constituents that I represent, and they're not in favor of that. And I don't believe that I would be in favor of that either. I think that particular issue is an element that needs to be decided by that merger needs to happen in St. Louis County by those particular voters. I'm not sure the people in Jackson County really care about the merger between St. Louis City and St. Louis County. And so I literally
understand
the issue. I dealt with the pull tax issue in my district here, and that's another issue that only occurs in St. Louis County. Do we have a sharing of pull tax there? And so there's some issues that are basically distinct to that particular area. And so I don't think it's a statewide issue. I think that maybe that may be in disagreement with some leadership comments that they made about looking at it from a statewide perspective. But I know that my constituents that I represent want to make that decision in St. Louis County, not have the state making that decision.
So we always do a segment called Five Questions to Wrap Up, and we always let Becky lead them. So let's learn a little about Senator Shocks.
All right, question one. So I know you read a ton of legislation, so I'm not assuming anybody has time to read books, but are you reading a book? What book are you reading right now, or what is your favorite book of all time?
You know, I don't read enough. I will promise you that. But probably the book that I read the most is the Bible. So if any book that I read, it is the Bible. I read more of that.
Bible and legislation.
Bible, then legislation. Obviously, if you understand the first Bible, you can understand the second one, because I think that's very key and vitally important.
I'll make a recommendation. The White Rat by Whitey Herzog is an excellent book. I do
love books, and don't take that in the wrong way. I do love books, and I've read a lot of books, and I need to read more, because obviously I think that's the key to knowledge is being able to read and do more.
I don't read, but I did read The White Rat by Whitey Herzog.
You know that the publisher of Missouri Times doesn't read.
Just being honest.
Whatever you write, right?
I believe in Oktoberfest, honestly.
Yeah.
Question two. So a colleague of yours in the Senate, we asked him this question, and I won't tell you who until you answer, who he wanted on a deserted island, and he chose you. And so my question is to you to say, which colleague of yours in the Senate, you're on a deserted island, you can define the terms of what makes them qualified to be there, but who do you pick?
That's a good question, but I will tell you this. In my choice, you know, I'm an outdoorsman. I'm a survivor guy. And so I'm going to want to choose someone that has some outdoor skills and some, you know, that's what I'm going to be looking for. And I think if I was trying to determine who may be the most outdoors person out there, it might be hard to choose there. But there's a couple of them, guys, that I just came off of a 10-day hunting trip in Montana. And I can tell you that, you know, we encountered some bears there. And I would hope that individual, if I was to encounter a bear, that they wouldn't run away from me, that they would be there with me. So that's
somebody
kind of personal.
I would run from the bear to bring me on the island.
But it's hard for me to answer that, but that's how I would make my decision is, who do I think that could help benefit to move us forward and survive?
It's funny that's the most controversial. That's the one everyone's always afraid
he's
of. Always. Their favorite colleague.
He's saying Jill Shoup. I mean, you read between the lines, he's saying Senator Shoup.
There you go. Well, so it was Senator Igel that actually defined the same criteria to say you're outdoorsy, you can kill a bear, you're not running from a bear. So Senator Igel said
you could build a boat as a
you guys were going to create your own civilization on this deserted island together somehow. Question three. What age do you permanently wish you could be?
Boy, that is very interesting, you know, because I can tell you this, there wouldn't be much I'd change about my life. You know, all the years and experience I have right now, I have three of the most wonderful grandkids that you could imagine. And so I can't imagine just staying at some point where I wouldn't be able to continue to experience them as they grow and learn. But I think that, you know, now that I'm in my 50s, I can tell you from just the aches and pains that occur in the 50s, I'm not real high on that. But I enjoy my grandkids and my family as much now as I ever did. And I'm able in a position to be able to do that. So I would say it'd have to be somewhere in my mid-50s.
Pretty much right now is a good answer, right?
I'm going to go age 51.
You're going to go age 51?
No, I just think it's going to be a good year.
I will tell you this, eyesight begins to fail. You know, when you hit that 50 mark, you're starting to have to wear these cheaters and reading glasses because it's not the same.
It's always been my thought, if the good die young, I've got a long time. You know, so 51 is a nice...
Oh, goodness, got fun. Okay, question four. What is the single best day of the calendar year?
What's your favorite day? Opening day of trout season.
Okay.
More than Christmas?
I love Christmas.
I love Thanksgiving over Christmas.
But I have been a trout fisherman, have been going since my early 10 or 12 years old. I started trout fishing. I've only missed three opening days since that time. And so it's just a tradition to go trout fishing.
You go where they fire the gun off and all that?
They blow the whistle. Yeah. And yeah, it's quite if you're a trout fisherman, you go on the opening day of trout season. I love every opening day of any season. If it hunts, if it swims, if it flies, I hunt it. I'm going to pursue it. I'm going to go after it. So any opening day.
What's your favorite day?
My birthday.
Okay.
My own birthday.
I agree with the senator about opening day. I used to love this time of year. I used to call it Scottober. Before Mike Matheny, we'd be Oktoberfest and we'd be in the playoffs. Now that Mike Matheny has been manager, it's the opening day of baseball season because we kind of know how it's going to end. And so maybe at some point we bring in a German-American manager like we had back in the 80s. We start going to the playoffs again. I'll switch to that early October season, but right now it's going to be opening day of baseball season or Christmas. Nobody's at Christmas.
Christmas is a lot of work.
If you would ask my favorite time of year is, it is spring. I love spring. And again, you have the renewing of everything. You have flowers, you have mushrooms, you have crappie, you have turkeys. You have all these new things that are coming back.
A lot of things for me to kill.
There's a lot of things for me to chase. Now, I tell you what, I do love October too, because October 31st, if you're a bow hunter, you need to be setting a bow stand October 31st because that's when the deer are going to be moving. So I love it all. I mean, it's hard for me to pick any day.
That's a good place.
That's the day after Halloween, right?
Yeah. October
31st,
yeah.
That is Halloween.
Oh, it is. Okay, yeah.
What's the last question?
The last question. What does life look like for Senator Schatz in 10 years?
In 10 years?
Yeah.
10 years, I'll be 63. And again, and I would never rule out in the political realm, you look at, what's next in politics. The doors that opened up that allowed me to be here, I couldn't have predicted the fact that it would occur. And so I can't really tell you in 10 years what might be there, but I still see myself in some form of service somewhere. I still think that I have enough energy to do something. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but again, I'm a type of person that's not happy or satisfied unless I'm doing something and producing something. And so I've got a business that we're operating that continues to operate while I'm gone. If it's me going back there, but hopefully it'll be at a little less pace than I do go, and be able to spend more time. Hopefully I have more grandkids. I have a lot of potential. I have three daughters. One is just recently married, so I got a lot of potential for more grandkids. So I can see spending time with them too.
That's a good place to be.
Yep.
10 years from now, my gosh, I don't know.
That seems pretty far. Hopefully I'm here doing it. If I'm doing exactly what I'm doing now, I'll be happy.
Me too.
My life is largely the exact same.
I assume I'll be at like a t-ball game for Gussie. Not t-ball, he'll be in like junior bay at that time. What are you wearing, your 10, something like that? Yeah.
Unfamiliar.
Yeah. We're planning on him making the garden.
I'll still be haunting these halls in 10 years in some way or another.
That's one place I don't see myself, obviously with term limits, you have an end of your career in the legislative year. I don't see myself coming back here.
What's the right year for term limits? Is 8 the right?
I think 12. I think if we were going to have 12 limits, if we looked at it, I think 12 years would probably be a better fit. Again, I think that the reality is that having good qualified people, I think we have term limits every time we have an election. And if somebody's doing a good job, why do you want to get rid of your most qualified people that are doing a good job? But if we were going to have term limits, I think 12 years would be a better fit. Or, you know, we've seen states that do, you could do more in one chamber, and then you kind of pick a career path and you either serve in the House or you serve in the Senate. But 8 years is really, it flies by. I mean, the reality is that this will be my upcoming year, will be my 8th year, 4 years in the House and the 4th year in the Senate. And I was like, wow, you know, time flew by. So, but 8's probably a little short. 12 is probably a little more realistic if we were going to have term limits.
With a part-time legislature, Missouri has some of the strictest in the country as far as term limits go.
Arkansas is like 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're right up there. I mean, we're right behind them.
Not to poke at any of the lobbyists or anything, but I mean, at the end of the day, again, you folks don't leave the building. We do. We get, and I think that unfortunately, that's where we've seen the institutional knowledge is in the people that can stay here at Roman Halls, and ultimately, you know, they're educating the new people that are coming in of the issues. That a lot of these issues come back time and time again, and so having that knowledge and knowing what happened and when those deals were made is key in the legislation moving forward in the future.
Well, Senator Schatz, you've said it all. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you guys for coming by. Enjoy it.
Maggie, I hope you can somehow walk off the fantasy football beat down. I hope we're still friends, right?
I'm texting Eve for a conference call right now. We need to get
all hands
on deck.
The head of football.
I can't take the smack talking from you.
Well, it's going to continue, so you can be prepared. Thank you, Ben Peters, for producing the podcast, and we will see you next week on the #MoeLunch podcast.